Eofanalia Rustica, Rhiannon.
Oh, it's another festival.
Come in and know me better.
They don't all have that.
Which, again, is from, have you learnt this time?
It's from The Muppet Christmas Carol.
No, it's from Charles Dickens'
well,
Christmas Carol.
It's the same thing.
No. All right, that sounded really good. Let's get this podcast going. Yay! Ave and a very festive welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Rhiannon Evans, Associate Professor in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University. This is episode CCXXXV, Fornalia Rustica. Listeners, let's close up for Fornalia Rustica. There's incense in the air, this evening incense everywhere. We'll sacrifice a goat and hold close people we love dear. The deadly threat of Faunus is stalking all the streets. There's only one more sleep till Fornalia Rustica.
The Fornalia Rustica.
Fornalia.
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 Yeah, A-U in Latin.
Okay.
Like someone's kicked your knee. Ow.
Fornalia.
But you know what? We're going to call it the Fornalia.
We're going to call it the Festival of Tumnus.
You're getting more into your children's literature here, aren't you?
Sorry.
This is a December festival, early December, and not so much associated with the city of Rome. This is one from rural Italy on the Nones of December, the 5th of December. And it is a festival of Faunus, or Faunus, who is a god very much seen as indigenous to Italy. He does get associated with some Greek parallel gods later on, but he's not Roman, he's Italian. He's to do with the Italian countryside.
Okay.
And he is a kind of aboriginal god. He might have been lots of gods originally, or lots of spirits, kind of multiple woodland spirits, because fauni in the plural, faunuses, appears in Ennius, who's a very early Latin writer from the mid-Republic, and in Virgil as well. And Virgil is kind of a bit obsessed with what goes on in the Italian countryside, I guess provincial Italy.
Mm.
There's a sort of feeling that this is the real Italy in some of those texts, you know, and Rome has become a bit metropolitan and they're all eating avocado toast. I don't know.
Well, that makes sense as far as, you know, who celebrates this god.
Mm.
And I don't know if celebration is a word. It feels like you're placating the god. There are gods that you make a celebration for, that you hold a festival for, that you make an offering for because you're asking them for help.
Mm.
This one, you're asking him to leave you the F alone. Get away from my sheep. Let us cut some wood down in peace because these are the things that are important to us in a country life. It's placating this god.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there is a connection between the two because it's begging a god for some benefit.
Mm.
But I think you're right that part of the feeling around Faunus is that that benefit is him not doing you harm because he's a bit of a tricksy god.
Yeah. You get your trickster gods as well, don't you? You get your pants who this guy's conflated with as well.
Yeah.
It all kind of comes into, you know, this is a loci genius, a local spirit that you get in the rural areas.
Absolutely.
Hence, they're not placating him in Rome.
Yeah. And look, there's some debate about whether he does come from this originally a plural sort of woodland or countrysidey spirits. And then that gets sort of merged and mythologized into actually he was an individual king of Latium way, way, way back. Or whether that's the original mythological form, the individual king, and then he gets kind of dispersed into woodland spirits.
Okay.
I have to say, on the basis of probability, I'd say woodland spirits and then conglomerated, pushed together as one king.
Conglomerated.
It's not a very good word for it, is it? And then kind of converted into one king.
Yeah.
Seems a bit more likely to me, but it's very much lost in the mists of time.
Okay, but we do have a mythological origin story of Faunus.
Yeah, absolutely. That he was a king of Latium, a Latin king, and the grandson of the god Saturn.
Okay, so he's part god.
Absolutely. Even when he's a king, a human king, a spirit often bridges those two worlds of the human and the divine. But yes, he has a divine ancestor. And he's also the father of Latinus, who turns up in the Aeneid. and he's often credited with founding Latin civilization in what is Latium, Lazio now, maybe around 1300 BCE, just because of when the Trojan War is, because Virgil in particular connects him with the Trojan hero Aeneas, who comes to Italy as the founder of the Roman race by marrying Latinus's daughter, Lavinia. Okay. So he's kind of therefore kind of shoehorned into that myth of the outsider coming in and marrying an indigenous woman.
So what is his connection to Pan then?
Well, he gets conflated with Pan just because he is amongst the animals of the countryside, kind of pastoral life, you know, sheep and goats and so on, and I guess the wildlife of the countryside. And he's sort of later portrayed as a satyr figure, so half human, half goat, goaty, very much like the way that the Greek god Pan is portrayed. And he's also a god of wild nature. He's not part of civilization. He stands outside of that. And they're both also kind of trickster figures.
Yeah.
So probably some of his characteristics come from this conflation. But he definitely was, you know, as really all the Italian gods were, they existed as individuals before that conflation with the Greek Olympians.
So is there an association with Dionysus and Bacchus as well, by extension?
The satyrs certainly are. The way they're portrayed. He doesn't directly by name come up in connection with him, but that kind of depiction, you can see that there would be a connection made just because of the goat foot and the tails and the little ears that would be associated with him.
So if he's living in the rural and he's connected to the pastoral scene, I guess he's living in the woods, and what's he being placated for? Is it just you live nearby, you're a neighbour, you're a spirit of the area?
Well, he's seen as dangerous to certain kinds of people and also flocks, because you'd think he'd be a protector of the flocks, but he might actually be someone that caused damage to them. But what he's particularly seen as causing damage to is women. And this seems to be because he's also aligned with a god called Silvanus, whose name literally means woodland, the silva, the woods in Latin. And he is another god of the forest who turns up in women's dreams as an incubus.
Okay.
So he kind of takes them over. So as you've already alluded to, he's not seen as a favorable god necessarily, but it seems to be partly because of this murky kind of conflation of him with these other gods. But also, I think, kind of fears about that chaos of nature as well that's there behind this in both Greek and Roman thought. Especially once we've got this kind of fixed civilization, that what's out there that might be scary to us is wrapped up in the representation of Faunus. On the other hand, and this is a dodgy derivation, you know, I always give a dodgy derivation because the Romans did. They thought that his name came from the Latin verb favere, which means to favor, which would mean that his name means a kindly one. Now, that has been thrown out because he doesn't seem very kindly. So, you know, that's just, it sounds a bit like that.
Yeah.
Another I'm slightly more persuaded by is that he's connected to the verb fari, which means to speak. And one connection here in literature is that Virgil, I've already mentioned, talks about Latinus, who is the son of Faunus. And he seeks advice from Faunus, from his oracle, when he's trying to decide who to marry his daughter off to. And it's Faunus who says to him, don't marry her to an indigenous Italian person. It'll be an outsider. He doesn't immediately obey this, and it causes trouble because she gets engaged to an Italian and then Aeneas comes along, which means war.
So, okay.
Obey Faunus or it could be trouble. However, even though I've said I'm more persuaded by that, again, it's something that the Romans thought, modern linguistic scholars think. It's probably not the real origin of his name.
So his festival is on the 5th of December, the Nones. So how is it being observed? What does the festival consist of?
So there is a temple of Faunus on the island in the Tiber, so Tiber Island.
Right.
Which is where a lot of the medical temples are.
Yes.
Asclepius.
But also the city, which I didn't think Faunus got to do a day trip very often.
Well, the peasants from the rural areas bring him offerings and dance.
Okay.
Presumably not just at his temple, but yeah, there is this acknowledgement of him within the city. Although it's a kind of contained area within the city, which is interesting, isn't it? He's not unleashed on the city itself. He's trapped on this island.
You want to keep a trickster god in a contained area, I think. Yeah.
I should mention that he has another festival on the 13th of February. we see these gods that seem to have December and then kind of early in the new year festivals, which is an interesting facet of Roman religion.
Welcoming and saying goodbye to the winter.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense for his particular area, wouldn't it? Because he's associated with the outdoors.
And welcoming is probably not the right answer when you're talking about winter in rural areas.
He is introduced into Rome what we think of as fairly late. Yeah. So 196 BCE, when his temple was built on Tiber Island.
Yeah.
So that must be a point at which maybe it's thought, well, we better placate him here as well. You know, Rome's becoming a little more urbanized by that point. So there's people starting to come into the city from the countryside. Maybe they're bringing his cult into the city.
Mm.
It's early days in the real urbanization of Rome, but it's interesting that it happens at that point and he gets this very relatively central temple.
Yeah. And I guess there would be sacrifices and offerings and feasting, maybe? Is it that sort of festival?
Yeah, there are definitely sacrifices made to Faunus, as you say, to appease him. Indeed, to keep his vengeance away. There's also incense burnt on the altar in Rome, presumably, but other altars, which would have existed in the countryside. Libations of wine, and the sacrifice is of goats, which is appropriate to him.
Okay.
And the thing that he seems to particularly need appeasement for is that by humans going into the forest and vandalizing it, chopping down trees for firewood, or I guess for other purposes too, you're destroying his home. He lives amongst the trees. So there needs to be an appeasement for that.
Okay,
we're not going to stop doing it, but if we do this festival, if we sacrifice goats to him and pour libations, maybe he won't come punish us.
So he's an environmental god.
Yeah, but the Romans aren't being real environmentalists. They're just saying, please don't harm us.
Yes.
Now, one of the interesting things about the Festival of Faunus, in terms of the evidence for it, is that it's not written down in any of the fasti, so the calendars of Rome. That's chance, presumably, what it was. It's just that, you know, what has survived doesn't include that. Everything we know about it, pretty much, comes from a poem by the Augustan poet Horace, who wrote four books of odes, and in the third book, poem 18, is a hymn to Faunus. It's just four verses, so I'm going to read it out. Faunus, lustful pursuer of the fleeing nymphs, come gently onto my land with its sunny acres, and as you depart, look kindly on my little nurslings, seeing that a tender kid is sacrificed to you at the end of the year. Plenty of wine is available for the mixing bowl, Venus's companion, and an old altar smokes with lots of incense. The whole flock gambols in the grassy meadow when your day comes round on the 5th of December. The village, in festive mood, is on holiday in the fields, along with the oxen, which are also resting. The wolf wanders among the lambs, and they feel no fear. The forest sheds its woodland leaves in your honour. The digger enjoys beating with his feet in triple time his old enemy, the earth.
That actually sounds like quite a good country holiday.
Mm. Around the Maypole in Britain, kind of fun. I'm not into the sacrifice, but, you know, the Romans were.
Yeah.
Poor little
But as far as
kid.
A Roman holiday goes, you know, there's feasting, there's incense, there's rest. It sounds restful.
Yeah, even the oxen are resting, so you're not doing agriculture. You can tell I'm not from the
doing
countryside.
Doing agriculture.
There's a lot of nostalgia in this poem, though, I think. I'm not saying that this is not what happens at the festival, but the tone of it is very much Horace with that, oh, you know, I've got this real nostalgia for the old ways and for not being in the city of Rome. Famously, Horace was given a Sabine farm by his patron, Maecenas. So he lived outside the city.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that this was the kind of rural lifestyle. He did not have the real rural lifestyle. He had slaves to look after him and so on.
It sounds a bit wistful then.
Yeah. And, you know, but he has an old altar. Not only does he not have a temple, but what Horace is describing, we know he did have a temple in Rome, but this particular version of the festival is happening at an ancient altar. He comes directly to the poet. This is very typical for him, actually. Come gently onto my land. Come and do good for me, or don't do bad for me, perhaps in this case. And I think it's very utopian in mood. I mean, however good this festival was, the lamb is not lying down with the wolf. I'm sorry.
Mm.
You know, this is kind of idealized version of what might happen. So we're getting into wishful thinking here, which is also typical of a lot of Augustan poetry. and the agricultural labourer has made up with the earth, which I guess is a kind of equivalent to what I said about Faunus needing to be appeased because you're cutting down his trees.
Yeah.
The digger is digging into the earth, and, you know, the earth is a goddess for the Greeks and the Romans, so you are violating the earth, but at this point you kind of make up with her, and the dancing on the earth rather than digging into her is a way of communing with the earth. And that triple beat is quite ritualistic. It's what the priests of the Salii, the priests of Mars, do in March. So it's kind of formal and state ritual there, whereas this is much more rural and local, happening in a village. He uses the Latin word pagus, which actually gives us the word pagan. It changes its meaning, but it means non-central, basically, not Christian, and here, not the city. It's as far from the city as you can get.
Okay.
We do get more information outside of this poem, but it comes from commentaries on this poem.
So, that doesn't count.
Well, it's still useful information, I guess. So one of the main commentators on Horace, a man called Porphyrio, who's writing in the 3rd century CE, in his commentary on this poem, he tells us that on the nones of December, the 5th of December, Faunus wishes the cattle free from danger. Mm. So specifically cattle there. And just before this passage, he's spoken of him as an infernal and pestilential god. So, as we've seen, there's a very much a dark side to his power.
Yeah, he sounds like he's a lot of trouble.
He's not trouble if you do this little festival.
Yeah, okay. We've said that this is rural area, mostly outside of Rome. How outside of Rome did this practice go? Did this observance of Faunus go?
Well, you think from Horace, and I guess Virgil as well, that this whole set of ideas is about Italy.
Mm.
And I think that's particularly important in Virgil. But of course, they're very much based in Italy. But his cult did spread, and it spread kind of as far as it could go in the Roman Empire. We have evidence of this from what is called the Thetford Treasure, or sometimes the Thetford Hoard, found in England, actually in Norfolk, in quite recently, 1979. Which I gather was found under very unfortunate circumstances, that the people who found it tried to hide it away and then it was built over. So the original context for it is unknown, and there might have been more there. It's now in the British Museum, this treasure. But it contains 32 spoons dedicated to Faunus.
Right.
So he's on tableware in Britannia.
These are quite late, these spoons as well. They're like 4th century, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So not only, you know, well after Horace was writing about them, but so far away.
Yeah, and also towards the end of the Roman period in Britannia. They're not going to last that much longer. Well, I guess another century, but it's very late on, and it's suggesting that this is meaningful to people in Britannia. I mean, sure, they might be imports. We might not have the actual cult there. We don't have evidence of this ritual happening there or sanctuaries to Faunus. Mm. But it is really interesting that his name even turns up that far away.
That was Rhiannon Evans, Associate Professor in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review. They are always very appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow us all on Blue Sky. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon. I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. This podcast was recorded and produced at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia, on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. So until the next year, I'm Matt Smith. Faunus bless us, everyone, and thanks for listening.